there is a land. A place in space-time, light years away. Where the best in progressive music of all types, rock, metal, electronic, and more, come together. It's time for you to take a journey to that magical realm where galaxies collide, the strangest of creatures lurk and slither, and rituals are enacted to bring about the dawning of a new age!
Okay, enough of the bicker bicker brouhaha. This is Progtopia, episode 128. And warm greetings to all of you in the land of Progtopia. Welcome to the program that features interviews, reviews, and discussions about both well-known and up-and-coming acts in Prague, a term we sometimes define loosely and proudly so. My name is Mark Ashby, and I'm the host of the show. Join us now for a trip through the wires, and hopefully you'll come out the other side ready to subscribe to the program if you don't already, and follow it on Facebook and Twitter, also if you don't already. Visit progtopia.com for past episodes and hear what you may have missed. For now, though, we press onward. Another revisit from a past guest will kick off this episode, namely that of solo artist and multi-instrumentalist Jeff Barone. We had him on at the very end of year one of the program in episode 022 to talk about his conceptual work, Conversation Pieces. Go to the archival section of progtopia.com if you want to hear that one. And as of April 20th of this year, he's got another album out called Acquiescence. It also contains some connections between tracks that range from straight-out rockers to softer sounds to the occasional growl and even slight country feel, even within the same track sometimes. But that's not to say it's a work that can't make up its mind. Rather, there's a through line you can feel through all 16 songs that make this an album I would really hate for you to sleep on. Jeff prefers to leave some of his subject matter open to interpretation, but I had a phone chat with him recently about some of the inspirations for individual songs on the album, the theatrical elements he brings to his work, and if he might like to turn Acquiescence into a stage show itself. You'll hear all that and more right now. So please, won't you join me? You know, it's been about 5.5 years since you were last on the show. You were the last guest of year one of the program, and now we're in year seven. So we need to catch up a little bit. What have you been up to since then?
Well, since then, just a bunch of different projects. After the conversation pieces, it kind of sparked my inspiration to work more in my studio and work more on my original material. So I just pretty much have been, hunkered down in my home studio for years and years, just kind of honing my craft, kind of pulling apart old projects and putting them back together and just kind of experimenting and, working on my engineering skills. And, it kind of 3-4 years later, I'm like, man, I've done all this work, but I haven't really released anything. So then, transition started when I moved back to Buffalo from Long Island, New York, about 2 years ago. I'm gonna have a lot more time now. No more trains, no more long commutes and stuff. You got the recording part down. You're prolific and all that. Let's transition into getting your brain around actually releasing some stuff, right. Getting some stuff out.
Sounds good. Well, we do have a new album here to promote. It's been out for about 3 weeks as we're recording this here, I think, something like that. It's following on from Conversation Pieces, which was what was out in 2012 when we talked. This one is called Acquiescence. And I can say, at least for myself, revisiting the older works, this album has kind of a heavier feel than the last one, in places at least. It's got a lot of moods that it goes through, though. But What's evolved in your writing process between these two albums, this whole time period?
To be honest, nothing. I think with Acquiescence, I made it more of a point to get to the point. Because, the conversation pieces, it was kind of just a... If you look at the track listing, there was only about 10 actual songs on there. The rest was just like filler, a bunch of soundscapey stuff. I'm like, I just get to the point. Get to the point. So I wanted to, make an album full of a lot of songs, like a lot of straight to the point, hard rock, acoustic stuff, heavy metal, progressive stuff, and get to it.
I do remember that we talked about conversation pieces having some overarching themes like problem of bullying, I remember we brought up as part of that. Are there any conceptual ideas at work with Acquiescence here?
Well, there is. It didn't start out as such. When I first started writing these songs, I'm like, I'm just going to record a solo album. No, crazy rock opera, concept, heady thing. I don't want to, just get it out, cool solo album, just right. To show your stuff, to put a sound to your name. But as I was working on the production and more of the lyrics and stuff, maybe subconsciously started weaving together these songs and into some sort of linear story. So that, as the months progressed, I kind of sat back and well, wait a minute, this is kind of like a, this has a, kind of a, first, second and third act type of thing. So, let me dig in there. Maybe I will. And I did. So, it's from the onset is just a solo album, but, to dig deep into it, I did write a libretto, book for it. So there's characters and stuff going on, but, to the casual listener, it's just some rock tunes.
Right, yeah. Well, I know that you have sort of that theatrical side of your personality, which we might talk about a little bit later, but there's a cult classic album that Acquiescence reminds me of, and I knew there was something in the back of my head while I was listening to it. I was like, this reminds me of something, at least not necessarily it's not a copy of this, but I think it holds up very well against it. I don't know if you're familiar with Kevin Gilbert's Shaming of the True. That album, this album, Acquiescence, just really reminds me of it. It's not like the subject matter, but this, the track to track segues, and there's changes in direction with the songs. They go beyond we have a fast rock song here. Now we got to slow it down a little bit. Now here's something with blues in it. Now here's a power ballad. It's like each song has a personality to it. And that's kind of what Shaming of the True is like. And I assume that's sort of the way that you approach that. That's really what it felt like to me. This is the personality of this song.
I kind of just let things organically come together as far as the track listing and the way it weaved and the linear storytelling, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of worked itself through, but Kevin Gilbert, I've heard that name for many, many years now, and I've dug into a few of his stuff over the years, but never really caught on. I did see some video online of Nick DiVirgilio doing maybe 10 years ago he did a live version of it, like a tribute.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
that was very cool.
Yeah, I would recommend checking it out. But like I said, I'm not saying it's a copy in any sense of the word. I got that feeling this is a story that's being told here. And it just, the feel of it, you're not afraid to try different things and some of those tracks that are different. Speaking of them, I wanted to get some insight into a few of these songs from you, if you want to talk about a few of them. I know that Faded is technically what kicks the album off. It feels a lot like a single, so maybe we should start there. Can you tell us about that song at all?
Yes, Faded, that song... Probably was the second or third song I wrote when I was, coming together with these songs. And, from the onset, it was going to be the first song. Because that opening riff, actually, the first track on the album is called Acquiescence. It's kind of like the overture. Right. But it's actually the bridge to Faded. Right. it was all written together. So I cut it at the 11th hour, and that definitely was going to be like, all right, this is the album opener. This pretty much sums up the whole concept or the whole, lyrical subtext of the album when I'm trying to talk about it. Pretty much sums up the word acquiescence without saying it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything's going fine in some form or fashion, and the weather isn't happy. You've taken the right steps, wrong.
Precious Pieces, that one is a real left turn compared to how the surrounding songs sound, but I like it. I'll play a little bit of it here along with the show, but how about this one? I mean, tell people before they hear any of it, tell them what they're going to hear kind of in that song, Precious Pieces.
Well, that Precious Pieces, it's about my kids. The first verse is about my son, the second verse about my daughter, and then I'm just kind of talking about, just imagining me outside watching them do their normal thing, and then all of a sudden the bridge kicks in and it twists, and then the whole thoughts of, any parent out there could probably attest to this. Am I doing the right thing? Am I going to screw them up? Am I screwing their life up? So that to get back to the concept of the album, or the musical theater of it all, it's basically it's a balance between the main character's career versus family.
Yeah.
So
a lot of us can relate to that, whether you're musicians or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's that, there's that kind of, I almost hesitate to say it because I don't want people to get the wrong idea, but like the bluegrass or country feel to it, that's kind of kicking things off in there. I mean, it's a really good way to kind of introduce it, I think, and to let it play out that way. I think a lot of people might be surprised to hear that amid some of the other sounds that are on the album.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place, but I tried to, try to keep it all, cohesive, I guess. But
it is,
Those types of songs, like, those really not out of the ordinary of what I'm usually writing or... Mm-hmm. Shows up on my iPhone every week, so
yeah.
But I was probably listening to a lot of Devin Townsend, Casualties of Cool, and that popped in my head. So.
Big boy, stop running in the house. Sit down and tell me what it's all about. His loss for words coming, no surprise. Familiar look, I see it in his eyes. Little boy, stop running.
Well, speaking of Devin Townsend, there's another track that has some of that, like the heavier kind of stuff that's sort of the mini epic of the album. It's probably my front runner for favorite track at the moment, having listened to it a few times, but that's Headhunter, which is a couple songs down the road. So what can you tell us about that one?
That more or less is a Devin Townsend ripoff.
I don't know about a ripoff, but there's certainly the influences there. I mean, you got sort of the growly vocal. When you hear Precious Pieces and then two songs later, you've got this Headhunter, it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, I guess, is to use another big word.
That was not supposed to be on the album. That was supposed to be a bonus track.
Oh, yeah?
But I would work on some other tunes and then go back to that one. I'm like, I'm spending all this time on this song. Why isn't it going to be on the album? It's going to end up in, Bandcamp bonus track hell. I'm like,
right.
No, this is going on the album.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did.
It's weird. It's good. Out there, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
that song was written that November of 2012.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Swimming in Sand were the two old songs that I did throw on there. So that was, mm-hmm. right after Conversation Pieces and... I had to put it on there. But yeah, it's kind of my homage to Devin / the Beatles almost. It's like an Abbey Road type of mm-hmm. Abbey Road medley.
Mm-hmm.
My take on it.
Yeah, no, it's really Yeah, it's neat. That's why I like it, because it's not predictable. So I think that's what draws me to it, whenever something can surprise me like that track does. I'm going to play one full track from the album now before we continue with the interview, and this track will kick off another of what I'm going to call our triple track specials, where three songs with a similar name or theme will appear throughout the course of the show. The theme this time being Babylon. So, to start off, this is the third track from Acquiescence, and it's titled 633 to Babylon.
For heaven's sake, let's just get through the day. Come on.
I don't think we talked about this before. It may have happened since our last interview, but I see that you once portrayed Jesus in Weber and Rice's Jesus Christ Superstar, and I just wanted you to know you're talking to a former Pontius Pilate buddy, so...
Oh,
you,
shit.
Yeah, you better watch your back. Do you get to perform like that often? Is that something you have time for or like to do, you know, getting on stage?
No,
like
that was 2005. I did that, and then in 2006 I was... Perchick and Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
And then I moved to New York. I'm like, oh man, I probably should have kept that thread going, but the city took over and life took over. But I'm back in Buffalo and there's a lot of theater stuff going on out here now, community theaters and halfway decent production production companies out here are always putting stuff on, and you know, the theater district in Buffalo is you know, Shays in particular has got tons of big tours going on now. So you know, who knows? I'm gonna get out there on stage. It's
But I bring it up because theatricality, like we've been saying, is obviously a major element of your work. What about ever bringing Acquiescence to the stage? If you could do that, would you?
I would, yeah. I mean, I've definitely thought of it, and like I said, the you know, with the script involved, I definitely could see, you know, some sort of multimedia thing going on with projections and, you know, different characters and whatnot, maybe like a rock oratorio or, you know, nothing different than the Taming of the Shrew stuff that I saw, you know, just a non-stage type of thing going on. But who knows? I mean, it's, you know, definitely in my brain. I'd love to see that come to fruition. But
I'll talk to some people around Buffalo. Maybe, you know, somebody will take a chance on it. Why not?
Absolutely.
You know, could be interesting.
When I was writing Acquiescence, I sort of implanted the story partially as, you know, my experiences. So it's me singing it, but as far as, like, the book goes, it actually tells the story. It's a prequel to another musical that I have yet to release. So that's the next project I'm working on now.
Wow.
All right. So
there's a lot that could be happening here.
And, you know, going backwards and going forwards, you know, keeping listening. And actually, in 2016, I released a whole other different album under the moniker Citizen 603.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 80s synthwave, you know, retro future type of.
Yeah, it had that, like, monochrome cover, like the neon green on black. Kind
yeah,
of
the
stuff,
green thing.
Yeah.
So that that story goes parallel with this one, too, so it's all the same world.
All right, well, why don't you tell everyone where they can go get Acquiescence and anything else here? It's conversation pieces, all the back catalog stuff.
For sure. Acquiescence is available on my website, jeffbrown.com. The album itself is, you know, on iTunes, Amazon, Spotify. I am selling CDs this time. If anybody wants to get the physical copy, it's on my website as well, Bandcamp. And there I have several, you know, all my other releases. You can listen to Acquiescence on Spotify and conversation pieces. So that's where they can get that.
This is an album I'm really glad came onto my radar. It's Acquiescence. It's just got some solid songwriting. There's great performances on it. A little bit of, you know, you really don't know what to expect from song to song. And I think that's important. And if you're of a dramatic bent like I am in my listening preferences, it's definitely something you want to listen to. So, I guess so. With that, we're going to thank our guest one more time, Mr. Jeff Barone. It's great to have you back on after all this time. I hope this album does really well for you. It deserves to be heard. So I appreciate you being back on the show today.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity. And we'll keep listening and tell everybody to keep listening to your great show.
His name is spelled G-E-O-F-F-B-A-R-O-N-E. So make sure that's what you type when you go to the website or to search for it on any of your favorite music platforms that he mentioned. Really, guys, do give this one a listen. Its unpredictability is its greatest strength, and I think prog fans of every stripe will find a lot to like in it. Now, another song in the triple track special to keep going with our theme. This one's simply entitled Babylon. And it's from a former guest band on the show, episode 101, if you're keeping score, from their album The Breaking of the World. Here's Glass Hammer.
kisses. Let them all burn in the world they hold dear. I sail away, crossing the Rubicon.
Right, on to our intrepid gig reporters. And with as many shows as they attend together somewhat near me in the Washington, D.C. area, in fact, we've been at shows together and I didn't even know it, this could become a semi-regular segment as well. Lacey Mucklow and Dave Purcell are both contributors, and in Lacey's case, editor, of the wonderful website Lady Obscure, which is where I've discovered a lot of new music myself in the past. But for this particular gig we're talking about, Lacey and Dave didn't stay close to home. They didn't even stay as close as Houston, where Lacey reported from for the Galactic Cowboys reunion show a few months back on this program. Nope. They left the continent of North America behind completely. So what band could possibly cause them to spend so much time and money just for a single show? To be honest, I really can't blame them for doing it, because I would love to have done the same. They traveled all the way to Odense, Denmark in late April for none other than Progtopia's first profiled band, one that's been on twice since. That's right, Anubis Gate. So let's hear what went down. What do you say?
In the red of light, I'm tempted. In the red of night, I face it all. In the blue of day. In the blue of day, I take the fall.
As a lot of longtime listeners of the show will know, Anubis Gate was on episode 001 of this program, in addition to two other times, once with a world premiere from Horizons. So Anubis Gate is very near and dear to us. Kim is always very generous about coming on the show. And they had their first gigs in a few years. over there in Denmark, and these two were just crazy enough to hop on a plane.
That's minor. We were very crazy.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, if time had permitted, I might have joined you, but I just kind of want to, you know, hear from you guys about what it was like to be a couple of Americans going over to Denmark and, you know, the whole experience, not just of the show, but of, you know, just going. And I know you hung out with the band. So what can you tell us about the trip over? Let's just start there. We'll do this chronologically.
We decided to go ahead and get direct flights, which made things a whole lot smoother. So we flew directly from D.C. over to Copenhagen. And in my case, I actually caught up with some Danish friends that I knew from about 8 years ago. And so I got a nice personalized tour of Copenhagen right after we landed. And Dave and his wife went their separate ways to see Copenhagen as well. I'll let them talk about their experiences. But I got to see a little bit of Copenhagen firsthand. And then that evening trained over to Odense where the concert was. But we decided to make a vacation out of it since we were going so far. So we spent the rest of the time in Odense, which is the third largest city in Denmark, and got to see some great sights while we were there, besides seeing the band. So I was looking forward to it. I've traveled internationally quite a bit, but I've actually never been to Denmark itself. So I was looking forward to seeing another country. And it felt very comfortable over there. Everybody speaks English, which is fantastic because I don't speak a lick of Danish. And even if I tried, nobody would understand me. So very friendly people, wonderful country. Absolutely loved it.
My wife and I, we went around to Copenhagen. Basically, my wife has traveled internationally, but she hasn't been for a long, long time. However, yours truly has never been outside North America until the trip over to Denmark. So it was definitely an experience for me to go international and to go off to a place where I've never been before, never been to Europe at all. So it was really an experience for me, really nice experience. Like Lacey said, the Danes over there are extremely friendly. Almost all of them speak English, which is really nice. A couple of minor hiccups while I was over there. Again, you know, most everything is in dual language, Danish and English. However, the train system, I found out, is almost all in Danish. So it's like you start had to figure it out through deductive reasoning. It's like, is this the right stop I need to get off on? But kiosk over there, for whatever reason, didn't like my credit card, so I finally had to get some Danish cash, put it in the system, and then I finally was able to get the trip from Copenhagen over to where we needed to be. So that was probably like the biggest hiccup over there. But like Lacey said, it was an incredible experience over there. I'll let her talk about the concert itself and our time over there and things like that. But one of the biggest things was that it was just a totally wonderful experience to be with the band, talk to the band, just be totally immersed in their culture over there. Because, you know, again, you know, you can experience a European band over here in the United States, but to experience it in their home country is a totally different concept. It is just incredible.
Yeah. It feels like this was like a destination wedding almost. Like, you know, you go. Wrap the.
It really kind of was.
Well, that's, you know, you're saying like, well, we're going for this main purpose, but while we're here, we might as well do these other things. So, you know.
Oh, man. No, it was nice. I mean, you know, we saw a lot of the sites over there that was in town and just outside the town. We just made a whole vacation out of it. I mean, you know, if you're going all the way over there, obviously, you know, the whole idea was to see Anubis Gate. But while you're there, you know, hey, see the sights.
Yeah. So you mentioned you hung out with the band. I know that was probably before and after. I don't know if it was after, you know, afterward as well, what time you guys got out of there. But, you know, I've only ever spoken with Kim, but it seems like they'd be pretty good folks to hang out with. And I think it was nice of them to sort of host you that way since you came from so far away. So how about what was the hang like with the band outside of the show?
I'll just say they're just fantastic people. They're down to earth. And I thought it was pretty amazing that Kim invited us to his home because we came all that way to see them. And he's like, at least we can do is feed you some dinner. And his wife made a fantastic meal, which included the Danish national dish, actually, which is a pork steak with some caramelized potatoes. And they made some other things, too. But it was fantastic to eat, you know, the real deal Danish cuisine. But it was so fantastic because it wasn't just at Kim's house and meeting him and his wife. Henrik came, and so did Michael and his wife Sabina. So they all made it over except for Morten, because he had some family conflicts, so he couldn't make it that night. But we just ate real Danish food, and just, I think we were there for about 5 hours just talking. And we didn't have a lack of things to talk about. And it was kind of cool because as we finished the meal, we kind of had some musical chairs at the dinner table so we could all talk to everybody, you know, and see everybody because we had about 9 people there. So it was hard to see people at the other end of the table. So it was really great to be able to chat with everybody at some point in the evening. So it was just very gracious of Kim to invite us over and get to know them all just in a regular, everyday kind of way. So besides that, we did see him at the concert before, and then they hung out a long time afterwards as well to meet, not just with us, but with everybody who came. And they just are very generous with their time and love their fans and, you know, do whatever it takes.
Fantastic. Dave, how early did you guys get to the venue? I'm just curious. If you came all that way, I assume you were standing in
line. No, we didn't get to the venue. We didn't get to the venue that early. Here's sort of the interesting thing was, again, you know, a lot of this stuff was coordinated over Facebook, and, you know, I have a lot of friends that are already into progressive metal, into Anubis Gate. And one of my long-time friends from Philadelphia, he is currently working over in Germany, and he had sent me a private message on Facebook. He said, "Hey, Dave, I'm in Germany right now, and you're going to be going to Denmark to see Anubis Gate. Do you mind if we meet up before the show and, you know, just hang out?" So I said, "Sure." So before the show, he and his fiance, who is from Germany, we met up at a restaurant, and then we ate dinner right before we went to the show. So it was really nice. In addition to that, a couple of Lacey and I's common friends, one lives in Copenhagen and one lives up in Norway, we all met there at the venue as well. So it was really nice to actually meet people that you are only friends with online. And you got to actually get to meet them in person. And that was really nice.
It's cool.
Agreed.
So, yeah. So, yeah. All right. We need to talk about like the actual show, like, you know, set list and, you know, what was the general vibe of the place that they were playing at?
I loved it. Dave, you can talk about it too, but it was a great venue. I think the U.S. needs more like that.
I was very impressed when when you first went inside the venue. Let me step back for a second here. You look outside the venue. It is a very old and rundown looking place from the outside. It appears to be the old train depot. The new train depot is right next door. So you look outside and said, "Oh, I think this is going to be a crummy place." You go inside. It's really nice, modern. And the first thing you see is a coat check. It is like, wow. A metal venue with a coat check. That's insane. So, yes, we both took advantage of it and drop off our coats, and we actually go into the venue itself. Nice, small place. It reminds me of a metal venue that used to be here in the Washington, D.C. area called Jax, later called Empire, that unfortunately closed down several years ago. But it was one of those things where it's like small venue, just standing room only, a small raised stage, sort of a darkened room in there. But again, something that is a very nice metal show area. Now, one of the things that Lacey and I both found out was the Danes are extremely friendly and extremely nice and respect you. You go off to a metal show a lot of times here in the U.S., especially if it's crowded. Like if you're trying to go next to the stage where Lacey and I were, I mean, we were like right up against the stage. People would crowd you. They would push you. They didn't want to go up to the stage. There, no, it's like they gave you plenty of space. They didn't crowd you at all. I mean, it was really, really nice. And it's something where I think American audiences need to learn that from the Danes, because it's one of the things where I just don't see that here at typical American shows. It's like around here, you know, they basically say, "Hey, you know," they want to get up close, get up front. And unfortunately, both Lacey and I tend to be on the short side. So it's like, "Oh, you know, let's just take advantage of them and crowd them." No, it was really nice. They just, you know, stood back and it was really cool.
This is why I wouldn't get into the pit at Prog Power the one time I went. Because so.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I can see it.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't even any crowd surfing. So.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah, it was nice. Didn't have to worry about getting trampled.
Yeah. So,
yes.
So Lacey, can you tell us something about the set? Like, what did they play and what were highlights from what they played?
Okay. Well, it was great because they hit on something from every album. So they went all the way back to Purification, but they did a lot from the new album as well, of course, because they're promoting that. So they started off with Psychotopia and The Combat, which a lot of people might be familiar with the videos and or maybe just with listening to the album, but that's what they started off with. But then they went on into Golden Days from the self-titled album. Mm-hmm. That's also another popular video that they have. So they played a lot of popular songs, I think, to kind of start it off. But then they reached all the way back and played the title song from Purification. And then they went on to Endless Grief. And then they kind of had this Horizon section. So they played Hear My Call, Destined to Remember, and Never Like This, A Dream. So they played those in a row. Then they went back to Covered in Black again and played Black, which is also another music video that they had out for the new album. Mm-hmm. So they touched on that again. And then back to Horizons again. They did Revolution, Come Undone. They played a lot of their heavy stuff, which I thought was kind of interesting. Then they switched over to the Detached and went to Options Going Nowhere for the next song after that. And then, of course, the end before the encore was Snowbound from Andromeda Unchained, another fan mm-hmm. favorite. So that was what they ended with. And then for their encore, they played Future Without Past and Hold Back Tomorrow. So I think they hit a lot of popular songs, a lot of well-known songs, and some great ones across their discography. So my only complaint, they played about an hour and a half, and it seems so short. You're done?
Are you done already? Yeah, that was one thing. It's like Lacey and I said, it's like, you're done already? Well, obviously, you know, when they went down to the encore, it was like, oh, no, it's encore time. Oh, my goodness. They're only going to play like two or three more songs at the most. It's like, wait a minute. What? Are they done already? No. And like Lacey said of the set list, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better set list. Again, all across the board, across their entire discography, some of the heavier songs, some of the more deeper track songs, but again, you know, some of the more well-known songs. I'm more favorite between the self-titled album and Horizons myself, and they played plenty of songs across those. Mm. But again, you know, it's like, it could have been another hour, and we still would have said it wasn't enough. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, whenever they don't play, they only play a gig every 3 years or so here, or however long it had been. You know, I guess you take what they give you. Maybe that's how they do it over in Denmark. We're just over here, just ugly Americans want more and more and more.
Kim did say that's the only the amount of songs they were able to rehearse because they don't live in the same city,
right?
Together, mm-hmm. so they're like 2 or 3 hours apart from each other. So. Mm-hmm. They don't have all the time in the world to put together a long set list. But right. I thought they made a good pick, you know, based on what the time they had.
And it's an amazing thing amongst the Danes, you know, here in the United States, you know, we travel 2 or 3 hours or for a show or even longer for that, say, like for vacations or things like that. Over there in Denmark, 2 or 3 hours, it's like going to the other side of the planet. Sort of like for us, you know, going across the, you know, the Atlantic Ocean to go to Denmark. So it's like they don't get together for things like that. From what they said, it's like it only takes about 6 hours to get from end to end for Denmark. For us, it's like, okay, you know, you hop in the car, you go off to the next big town. Right. You know, we live in the D.C. area. That's like going maybe to New York City or to Pittsburgh or something like that. There it's like, oh, my God, 2 or 3 hours. That's like, you know, we don't do that.
That's half the country.
Exactly.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, they don't just hop in cars and run to shows like we do.
Yeah. How about, did you have any, since it was kind of short, was there anything you really wish they would have played that they didn't get around to? Not to complain.
I didn't think about that either, yeah. I mean, you know, they hit the songs I wanted them to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, again, like Lacey said, you know, they placed a lot of stuff like Hear My Call, Destined to Remember, Never Like This, A Dream, Future Without Past, Hold Back Tomorrow. I mean, those are the songs I really wanted to play, Golden Days and such like that. Those are the ones I really wanted to play, and they played them all. So the songs I wanted to hear, they played those songs, so I'm okay with that. But, you know, could they have done a few deeper tracks? Yeah, sure, of course. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, over the course of 7 albums, yeah, you know, they could have played a lot more, of course. But, you know, hey, I'm really happy for what I heard.
I'm kind of partial to the Jacob Hansen albums. Not that the others aren't great, but you know, Andromeda Unchained and Detached was kind of where I came in with them. So that's my, you know, entree into it.
I think I would have liked to have heard like Eerie or something like that, or something from Andromeda Unchained.
Yeah.
More, but I'm not complaining.
next time.
A lot of the stuff I like, you probably won't ever hear at a concert, you know, like the New Delhi assassination or
Operation Cairo
or something.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
That would be kind of interesting in concert, though. So,
absolutely. I'd love to see that.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Did it seem like the people who were there, I mean, knew the band, were kind of, you know, deep with the band, or were there like new fans made that night? You can always hope for that too.
I really don't know if there were new fans, because there are people who came from a bunch of countries because they know the band, you know, they're diehard fans, I think, like we are.
But the amazing thing was, Lacey and I were not the most traveled distance. There was a couple that came in from San Diego.
Wow.
That surprised the living daylights out of us. It's like, whoa, what? There are more Americans, more crazy Americans than us that travel not only across the Atlantic Ocean, but across the United States before you cross the Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah.
What?
You do it for what you like. I mean, you know, I always said for the kind of music I like, I'm born in the wrong continent. So.
Oh, I've said that before.
Yeah,
I said that too many times.
Because it's like you get Prague Power and Rozfest, and that's about it. You know, it's not a whole lot else happening around here that's, you know, nice chance to see bands like that. Yeah, Lacey, I wanted to touch on the fact before we get out of here that you are one of the reasons, the big reasons that the Orbitz box set even exists. Now that, I mean, I definitely got my copy.
I think we all do.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's some left, I think still, so, yeah, with Lance, probably, with Nightmare Records.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you got involved doing that or helping them out with that project?
Sure. That was something I wasn't really planning on ever happening. It's kind of funny. The whole thing started with me as a fan because I remember Kim talked on Facebook a while, like a year or two, saying, yeah, we're going to re-release the first four albums. We're going to do this box set thing. And I was like, oh, yay. Now I can finally get some actual physical copies, you know, that kind of thing to finish out my collection. So I just kept bugging him. I'm like, when's the box set coming out? Oh, I don't know. Maybe down the road. So that went on for a while. And I'm like, are you going to do the box set? So anyway, we kind of started talking and he's like, well, we really don't know how to go about it. And we're not really sure about doing it out of Denmark because of all the taxes attached to it and all that kind of stuff. So I said, well, you know, Lance is your record label and Lance is in America. Nightmare Records is in America and we have Kickstarter. So I'm like, why don't you launch it out of the U.S. and let Lance handle it? And, you know, we'll do it from the U.S. side and you don't have to worry about the stuff from Denmark. And he was like, that's brilliant. I never thought of that. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm surprised that's something you hadn't thought about before. But anyway, and I told him that I successfully managed a Kickstarter for a CD for my flute choir that I play in. So I said, if you guys need any, you know, tips or want to ask any questions, you know, let me know. I'll be happy to help where I can. But that was where I left it. I wasn't planning on doing anything more than maybe a piece of advice or something here and there. So Ken's like, okay, well, I'll get back to you. I'm like, okay. So he wrote me a couple days later. He's like, okay, I talked to Henrik and Lance and you're in. Will you manage the Kickstarter for us? And I was like, what? Are you serious? So that's really how it started. I didn't expect to be a part of it, but they, I guess I talked and figured out of the three of them, I had the most experience with it and
You're
asked
hired.
Me to help out.
You're hired.
So it was a year and a half really that we worked on that together before we actually launched it. And then, you know, the couple of months that we had it going and then the aftermath after it was finished and Lance did a lot of that, all the shipping and getting it produced and everything. But we did a lot of work ahead of time behind the scenes that I think a lot of people didn't know about, but I was absolutely thrilled that they asked me to help them on it. It wasn't something I expected, but I was so happy that they asked me to do it and that and ended up being successful. So it was kind of one of those things I wasn't planning and I was really just kind of asking as a fellow fan. But then, you know, I had the wonderful opportunity to work with these guys and I can't speak highly enough about all of them. They were a pleasure to work with on a business level. So
cool.
It was fantastic.
Well, whatever's left in stock, if you don't have it yet, definitely get it. If you want those physical copies of some of those out of print ones, for sure. All right. Well, to wrap it up here, I just kind of want to know where you guys rank this whole experience. You guys have done a lot of concerts, been to a lot of places, a lot of shows. Where does this rank on your all-time list of experiences, live experiences?
Number one, absolutely, positively the best concert I ever went to.
Wow.
I mean, it because, again, of the whole experience of going over there, actually spending time over at Kim's house, like Lacey said, with Kim, with Henrik, with Michael, with you know, with Kim's and Michael's wife, and also got to meet Kim's dog. And it was just really a fun time over there, meeting, again, friends that we had met online, just the whole experience of going to Denmark. I think that's why it's number one. I mean, it just absolutely positively the whole overall experience. And, okay. And like you said, I've been to a lot of shows, and I think this one just ranks up there like crazy. It's insane.
Well, now, Lacey, you have to say it's number one because Dave already
said I know. And I've been to a lot of concerts, you know, and I've had some pretty great experiences. And there's like some top threes that I'm thinking of. And I think probably what would have been my number one before got ousted by Anubis Gate. So, but I mean, the concert itself was a great concert. They did it flawlessly. It was fantastic. But especially as a package experience with the whole trip, the dinner, you know, before and after the concert, during the show and everything. It's a memorable experience that I'll never forget.
Well, I'm very jealous. So you're
a lot of people were jealous. You know, whatever the time where we're going, it's like, you're going to Denmark? Did you see the Anubis Gate? Exactly.
It's as soon as I saw that they were, well, I wouldn't have been able to go anyway because I was busy that weekend. Not that, you know, my wife would have just been, she doesn't really like the same sorts of music. So I would have definitely had to wrap in some other sort of destination wedding style kind of thing.
Well, it was sort of funny because it's like I sort of joked with Lacey that our respective spouses, I call them the metal widows because it's like, you know, they went with us over there. And it's like, you know, Lacey and I were at the right at the front the entire time there. And they were sort of off to the side. And they were doing their thing and da-da-da. You know, and then they were over together. And I said, I think we should say hi over to the widows over there. And, so because, again, you know, we couldn't have done it without our respective spouses going with us and supporting us. And also, of course, you know, I'm sure you know, Rick wanted to go on vacation. I know Diana did. So it's like, I know whenever this thing was announced, when Kim announced it on Facebook, I told Lacey, it's like, Lacey, I think we're going to go to Denmark. And then, you know, on the next trip, I went over to my wife. It's like, Diana, you want to go to Denmark? So, yeah. But
why?
Really
no reason.
Yeah. You want to go see a metal band. What? So, but it was really cool.
Kim, I said, if we can't get you over here, I'm gonna see you one way or another, and if I have to come to you, I'll do it. And lo and behold, there we
were. Lo and behold, that's what we did. Absolutely.
Well, Lacey Mucklow and Dave Purcell of Lady Obscure here, they've given us our Anubis Gate gig report. So thank you guys once again. I really wish I could have gone over there with you, and I'm very envious of it all, but thank you for taking the trip, and thank you for reporting on it for Progtopia here. Hope maybe sometime we'll get you guys on for another gig report. But thanks again. Maybe we'll talk again soon.
My pleasure. You're welcome very much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark.
I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for an Anubis Gate show a little closer to me. Or maybe I'll win the lottery and have a free weekend next time they're doing a show anywhere else in the world. Thank you, Lacey and Dave, for allowing the rest of us to live vicariously through you both. That brings us mostly to the end of the show, but we do have one more in the Triple Track special to play, which I'll get to shortly. One more thank you to Jeff Barone for stopping by a second time. And make sure to go to GeoffBarone.com for more info about his new album, Acquiescence. He's got a lot of videos up there, and you can access them on YouTube about the making of the album. And as for Anubis Gate, that's just anubisgate.com. That'll get you similar information about our favorite Danish prog meddlers.
I'm sure we'll have Kim Olesen on again next time there's an album out, if not before. We love him around here. Progtopia's opening theme music is from the Salvation Song Suite by Galahad on their album Beyond the Realms of Euphoria, used with permission. Thank you all for listening. The last of our triple tracks, also called Babylon, might be familiar to many of you. This is the classic Greek prog band that featured both a young Vangelis on keyboards and Demis Roussos on vocals. Of course, I'm talking about the album based on the biblical book of Revelation, somewhat scarily entitled 666 by Aphrodite's Child. Enjoy. We'll see you next time in a land called Progtopia.